Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, AMC did it. They added ads. Marvel ended Phase 5, finally. ScarJo is the biggest actress on the planet, and look up! Superman is finally here. Not like literally here. He's not here, but he's there. You know what I mean? He's there. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Danport.
Hey, buddy.
Troy Heinrichs.
I am not faster than a bird or a plane.
You are not. I want to rejigger that a little bit. Like, I want to change the song. I want to be like, Superman, Superman does whatever super can. That's, yeah, it's not going to spin the web.
Does whatever his doggy can? What?
There we go. Does whatever his doggy can.
There's a dog in the movie. It'd be awesome.
We're going to talk about Superman at the end of the show. So if you're just here for that, check the timestamps. Jump to the end. Boom. Done. And remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on your social medias, wherever you find podcasts. We're either The Hollywood Outsider or Buy Popcorn, one of those. And rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. But be sure to go to Podcast Awards. We are in the nomination phase at under TV and Film at podcastawards.com. You can vote for us. It's that time of year. When that happens, if you go to podcastawards.com and you find TV and Film, you can use as many email addresses as you want. Sign up as many times as you want to vote for us to get us into the final nominations. That's an award that only listeners decide. So it's really exciting whenever we make the finals. So check that out and make sure you verify. They always send you an email to verify that you are who you say you are. That's legit. That's not spam. All right, guys. How you been?
Oh, man, I don't even know if I don't know how to podcast right now.
It's been a while, right, since you've been here. Troy and I hopped in for like a little emergency session for Jurassic World, but...
We needed the emergency session.
We did. Yeah, we did. I had to see that again, by the way.
We had to yell at the company to be like, why did you ruin your chance for a sequel?
Shh, don't spoil it.
Still bothers me.
Don't spoil
Still
it.
Still bothers me.
But if you haven't seen the movie, when you see it, just know, pay attention to the last 10 minutes and know that they should have done it a different way and it could have been magical. But hey, and then you listen to the podcast and you'll find out what that magic is.
Yep.
Yeah, now I really have to go see it because I haven't gone seen it yet.
You want us to tell you how it ends? I'll tell you.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead, tell me.
Okay. Dinosaurs attack. People, they feign the attack.
They feign the attack?
They feign the attack, yep.
As in like they fake it? They fake an attack?
Maybe.
Because that's what kind of feigning means, isn't it?
Yeah. Just saying. Go watch it.
Is this the learn new vocabulary words portion of the show?
No.
Or John, trust me, you don't want to go see it. It's terrible. It's awful.
Okay. Well, I mean, I know you guys like going to go see showings of movies that are terrible, awful twice.
No, that makes sense. My wife made me see it a second time. I liked it. I liked it just as much the second time, probably a little bit more because I cared less about the people.
Because they were already dead, wasn't it?
No, it's right. Because the story was stupid. Yes, they were all dead. They were all dead on the island the whole time.
You wake up and it's actually you. He's in the shower playing with his dinosaurs in the bathtub.
Weird. It's very weird. They're all at the funeral home. It's weird. I don't know what's going on with it. What a great crossover that could be. Doesn't Disney? Yeah, J.J. Abrams did Jurassic World. They could totally do a Lost crossover. If they had like the survivors of Lost, they came back. And they end up on Jurassic World or park or planet or whatever the hell they're at. That could be phenomenal.
Jurassic is universal.
You just went Jurassic Planet. This is like a Fast and the Furious thing now. I can't wait. There's a crossover happening. The dinosaur riding dinosaurs is going to happen.
Did you hear John? John's over here like, yeah, Jurassic is universal. And the other one's ABC and Disney. What? Don't be a dick, John. I'm trying to make this work. This is magic. And we want to have this. It's either that or Vin Diesel shows up if you want to keep it universal. Which do you want? Riding a dinosaur?
Marvel, it's going to be Vin Diesel as Groot. So I am Groot. And a dinosaur shows up and he's riding around on a T-Rex like it's nobody's business.
That's what he would be doing if it was on Universal. Yep. Either way, he's going to show up. By the way, he's bringing Paul Walker back. That happened when we were gone.
Yeah, weekend at Brian's.
It's kind of weekend at Brian, Fast and Furious.
Fast and the Furious weekend at Brian's.
I'd watch it.
You remember when we used to cry at the idea of Brian being dead?
Yeah, and then he just keeps talking about it. Don't get me wrong. I think it's kind of cool he's still alive in that world, but don't ruin it. Maybe just have Paul Walker give a smile at the very, very end. That's all you got to do. You don't really have to do a whole lot. He doesn't have to be a fully fledged character. But yeah, they're going to bring back Paul Walker for the last Fast and Furious before it spins off into Dom's son or something to keep it all family.
Oh, yeah, because you're going to have to keep it in the family that way.
You got to keep
it. That's going to be a thing.
You got to. All right, well, let's talk about some stuff because AMC Theaters added non-movie ads before the movie start time. And I think we talked about this a little bit, that it was coming. Regal and Cinemark already do this. This isn't new. But now AMC is doing it. And what I mean by that is like Allstate, their ads. And now that we've experienced this, because I've seen it a couple times now, specifically with Jurassic World, I guess the question is it as frustrating as people expected? Because now AMC even has a kind of a bumper when you buy tickets. It says, please allow 25 to 30 extra minutes for trailers and additional content before the movie starts. And I will tell you, I've seen three movies since they started doing this, and it was 30 minutes plus each time.
That's insane. Like, people are trying to plan their lives around going to the movies, and like having to add an additional 30 to 40 minutes to your movie experience. Like, that's ridiculous.
Now, that's fair. And I do think it's too long, and I love trailers, but I'm starting to not like trailers because you've got it going for too long. But I do think they're telling you ahead of time, you can plan accordingly. Like, I just changed how I go to movies. Like, I used to want to be there before the start time. Now I'm showing up 15 minutes into the movie or start time, 15 minutes into the start time.
The challenge is that it's like, hey, everybody, come advertise in our theater. We have this great reach and this great ability for you to get in front of all these eyeballs. And, oh, by the way, don't come for half an hour. Why? Well, why?
Because they get paid. I mean, they get paid by the studios for trailers, too. But this is a way for them to
keep pulled theaters all state, open. Hey, give me $1 billion to put your ad in my screen. And, oh, by the way, no one's going to see it because I told them to come a half an hour later on the app.
That's Allstate's problem. Really? I mean, it is. I think you have to tell them, because otherwise people are going to be pissed that they're there for, and you got to have that as kind of like you're out in case people want to try to throw litigation into it.
Do they? Because yes. We've been sitting there for half an hour for the last 10 years anyway.
No, it's been like 15 or 20 minutes consistently.
It's been consistently 25 minutes since the pandemic.
Dude, I go to a movie every week. I've never had it be 25 minutes until this month. Never.
No.
Never. Never. You're drunk. Wrong. You it's drink wrong. When you go to the movie. And you should stop. Well, I mean, if you're having a good time, keep doing it. But just make sure you're not.
I'm just supporting the theater. You keep telling me to support the theater. I buy a drink when I go in. What can I tell you?
It's probably cheaper than popcorn.
It probably is.
It is.
Not as good on the profit side, but.
Now, you've experienced it. I experienced it. How long was yours? Mine was about 32 minutes, I think, for both Jurassic World.
I've consistently been 20 to 25.
Okay. So you haven't really hit that half hour mark yet.
And honestly, I don't think I saw an ad, but that's because we came in 5 minutes after the start time. So maybe the ads are like the first thing and then the trailers start.
I got it right in the middle and it was Allstate. I'm not trying to plug Allstate. I don't really care about your product, but I just, you know, that's what was there.
Yeah. Especially after they moved all the jobs out of Chicago down to South Carolina or wherever. Oh,
did they?
Yep.
I really don't like Allstate. Actually,
whole campus is closed.
It was an ad for Yeti. I'll take it back. It was an ad for Yeti. Yeti. Love their coolers. There. Hope that helps.
Was it a Yeti that's in the Yeti ad? Like all the trail, like all the reels and stuff.
Yeah, there's a big snowman or whatever the hell that is and running around jumping in a cooler.
I'm surprised it wasn't like a partnership with Coke. Like, keep your Coke cold during the movie. Put it in your Yeti.
I mean, they already have that. That's part of their opening thing.
I know.
John, what do you think about this? Is that too long for you? Do you feel like it's fair if they tell you ahead of time, or is it BS?
You know, at first I was annoyed at the idea, but no more I think about the whole it being fair that they're telling us ahead of time. Yeah, it's fair. It gives me the opportunity to say, okay, well, we're going to go to a 5:25 movie, but really it's going to be a 5:15 or no, a 5:40 movie. Like, that's when I know I have to be there by.
Or, if you happen to go to a movie with Amanda, who hasn't been on here for a while, but I swear she's still part of the podcast, you still just tell her 5.
Yeah, because she won't show up until halfway through the movie at that point.
Exactly. This actually gives her so much more of a buffer. It's good for people like that, late people. Yeah. Now, I've heard concern that some people are saying that this is going to encourage more people to walk in late. I haven't had that. Like I said, I've seen three movies where this is the case. I haven't had it happen once.
Well, and I'm not the kind of person who likes walking in the movies late. And it drives me nuts when people do. But this might change me into a person who decides to start walking in the movies late.
What is late?
The title started. You're late.
Oh, I don't think people are going to miss the titles, the title role.
If you miss it, so Aaron says it's 32 minutes. You say it's 25 minutes. So if you miss whatever the window is, depending on the theater that you're at, if you're thinking 35 minutes or 32 minutes, but you end up going to a theater that has 25 minutes, you're walking in at the title card.
Yeah, you're right there on the button. Right there on the button.
That's what we're talking about when it shows up late. But on the flip side, it's really good Amanda isn't here tonight, because then we don't have to have this conversation with her. And then she doesn't have to plan for that 25 to 32 minutes and start movies late, right? It's a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Except that AMC already tipped her off, putting it in the app. So
she doesn't read.
late people will do that. They will adjust their lateness. I always find that fascinating. Now I got extra time. You were late before. You don't have any extra time.
No. You have the same amount of time.
My routine's rarely changed. Like, I get to the movie theater like at start time, get my snacks. I'm in the theater 15 minutes, you know, then I might get like two trailers before the movie starts.
See, I am a person, as you guys know, religiously, I do not like to miss trailers. I get very irritated when I do. For me, that's part of my experience and I enjoy it. It's officially
on YouTube.
Let me finish my freaking, I don't like seeing it on YouTube. I don't want to watch it on my phone. I want to see it on a movie theater. That's where I'm going to see it eventually. That's where I want to see it. Whenever we get these big fancy releases, I try my best not to watch them. I'll post them and share them, but I'm not watching them. I wait till I go to the movie theater. I want to see it on a big screen, just like the movie I eventually want to see. Don't hate me because I'm beautiful. And then I go.
That's not why I hate you.
But now when I go, I actually am actively planning on being late. This is actually causing me to miss most of the trailers that I otherwise. Now, granted, I'm going to know those movies anyway. You are. John is, but it is very much something that's going to impact my movie going habit, so to speak.
The bigger question is going to be, what happens when the advertisements take up more time than the trailers, and do trailers become 90-second trailers or 60-second trailers? Don't. Because the theaters are going to cater more to the advertising than the trailer side.
Then I would probably start showing up right when the movie starts.
Right.
I won't deal with those. There's a reason why I gave up TV. You know, I only stream when there's ads that can be removed. I don't watch network TV. And studios are pissed about this, by the way. Studios are pissed. Sony Motion Pictures Group Chairman and CEO Tom Rothman, he spoke publicly about it, that he thought this was unfair because they pay money for those trailers and put them in theaters, and they pay the theaters to play those trailers. And so this is distracting and taking people's interest away from those trailers. And so he said, and this is a quote, and I mean, I'm not completely sure this quote makes sense, but I'm going to read it anyway. If a tree falls in the woods and there's no one around to hear it, what if a trailer plays in a movie theater and no one sees it? What good does it do? All right, it does make sense. It's a good point.
Except it's not, because I can see it on YouTube.
No.
Because you, Studio Head, also release it on every social media platform there is. So really what you're doing is you're buying advertising from the theater to put the trailer in the theater. So really Allstate has the same amount of ability to buy that exact same spot at twice the price. The theater can choose whether or not to run your trailer or run the ad.
That's one theory. The other one is you just missed people like me who would see it in a theater, because I'm not going to watch it on YouTube. I do not watch trailers on YouTube. I just don't.
If you had no other way to
see it. That's the only way I'll watch it. I will watch a TV trailer on YouTube, because that's where it belongs. A movie theater, I want to see in a trailer. A movie trailer, I want to see in the movie. Damn it, man.
But if you have no other way to see the trailer, no other way to see
that's it. That's the only way that I would watch it.
Still be able to see it.
That's the only way. Yeah, that's true. And I'd still be able to see the Allstate ad, because I just have to say Allstate, my phone would bring it up.
So if I'm the Sony person, I'm like, why should I be spending my money on putting ad space in the theater? I can put it on YouTube for free, save that cash, put it back into my investment, and make a better movie.
Well, my response is maybe the studio heads should go back to their theatrical windows like they keep trying to go back to, and then maybe they'd have more of an argument, because right now they've kind of been screwing theaters. So I think theaters are just trying to make up some of the difference. There you go. Let's move on. We've had enough time on that one. So Scarlett Johansson, this was a surprise, is now the biggest box office star worldwide of any actor ever, which it should be over 15 billion total by the time you hear this. And I know like 8.7 billion or so is Marvel, but that's impressive as hell. But the thing is, does it mean anything? Now, I remember, and the reason why I say that is when I was younger, you know, people have been tracking box office stars for decades, right? It's always been a thing. What's Tom Cruise's total box office? Will Smith's total box office? Harrison Ford wore the crown for a long time. And I think the difference there is most of those were leading roles. And they weren't really part of many ensembles. I would, you know, I guess you could debate Star Wars on Harrison Ford's behalf. So, I mean, is the number one, does it count? I think it counts. I mean, you know, Sam Jackson held it for a while. Why not Scarlett? I think she does great work. She's very eclectic. She has a hell of a filmography. If you really look at her filmography, she's really diverse in terms of what she picks. I think people don't give her nearly enough credit. But does that mean anything to be the biggest box office star?
It's yes or no for me. Like, does it show that she's a trusted to be in franchises? Sure, it absolutely does. But no, because it doesn't necessarily represent or, you know, her individual draw, because she's just been able to make a lot of good, small, smart choices.
Isn't that what most actors do, though?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, that's what it is.
So Tom Cruise does.
Yeah, right. Like you said, she hasn't been a lead actress in some of those movies. She's just been in one of the names in it. It just means that she consistently makes smart choices, and that's it.
I mean, Aaron doesn't want me to talk on this one because it's the same problem I have with, like, the biggest movie ever. Like, money is a stupid measurement, in my opinion, when it comes to this stuff, because it's different today than it was 10 years ago, right? Does this mean ScarJo's the biggest box office? I mean, what about Sidney Poitier? What about Walter Matthau? What about all these actors that were from the 50s and 60s? If you put them in today's dollars, would it be the same case? I don't know, because I'm not going to do the math and the inflation on that, but that's why I don't think it means anything. I think what it means is that ScarJo has done a lot of great work, and she's done a lot of great work, not as a front person. I think that is the commemorable thing to say. Like, she is, her movies, people go see her because they want to see her do her thing, but she doesn't have to be the lead in order to bring money in. But then it's also to say, like, is she the main draw then for that movie if she's not the main person? Right, were people also coming to Jurassic, for example, to see Mahershala, or were they coming to see the Marvel movies for Robert Downey Jr.? So, like, to me, it's like, it's cool, but it's really not something that I would care about one way or the other. I go to see ScarJo because I want to see ScarJo, because she's amazing in her craft.
And I really respect a lot of her choices. Like, really, I mean, I was looking through her filmography, I'm like, man, she really has been in a ton of movies that I just forget that she's attributed to. Like, her...
She was like the AI comic one, right? Where she was like, I can't remember the name of that one, but she was like a...
It's the one that she got in trouble for because they were really upset. Ghost in the Shell.
People should really look into what the story, if they really want to... There's no reason to be mad about that. But hey, people are what they are. Well, I'm just happy for ScarJo. I think that's great news. Good for her. Now, speaking of Black Widow, we're going to segue... So we're not really doing a topic this week. Our topic is kind of Superman, because this has been probably the most hyped movie, I think, of the year. Do we agree on that? Superman? Hyped. I didn't say best. I said hyped.
Yeah, it's the most hyped movie of the year.
I mean, you have a whole studio resting its future on it. That's pretty big hype. And I've seen them everywhere. And I want to see Brosnahan and more things. Don't get me wrong, Troy. I know you're a huge fan. I love her. I'm just saying, I've seen Superman everywhere. And the dog.
You probably don't even remember the first time you saw Rachel Brosnahan.
I did too. It was on the Blacklist.
Very good.
Boom!
I'm proud of you.
Boom!
Good job.
She's very good too.
She's very good.
She's an excellent actress. I think she's going to be, you'll find out later, but I think, wink, wink, she'll be an excellent Lois Lane. But okay, so phase five. We're going to talk about Marvel before we get to DC. So we're going to get ready to review Superman and the true launch of the new DC universe. But first... The Marvel Cinematic Universe, MCU, has now finished Phase 5. And Phase 6 begins with the Fantastic Four First Steps later this month. But I want to talk about how weak or strong or where this phase landed for you. And I shouldn't be giggling because it's kind of giving away where I am. But, so I'm going to run through these real quick. Just to remind everybody what the titles were, okay? And then you guys give me what your score or your thoughts on phase five of the MCU. And keep in mind, this is the franchise. I see, Troy, this is where you don't like inflation, and I don't like this being called a franchise because they're all completely different movies and I don't watch all of them. But whatever.
I don't think it'd be called phase five because I didn't know we were still doing that thing.
Yeah, they're still doing it. So here are the titles. TV and film, right? And in order of release. So you got Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Mm-hmm. Now, hey, I don't... It's worse than you remember.
I need like a buzzer.
Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Woohoo!
Or actually, let's do this. Let's be more fair. So you get a little bit of a inflection, okay? Just give me a yay or nay as I mentioned the title. No, or you go, or yay, meh, or nay. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania.
Eh.
Meh.
Nay. My thumb is straight up my ass right now. It's so far down. Guardians.
That would be a thumbs up then, technically.
I'm upside down right now. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yay.
Yay. Secret Invasion.
Nay.
No comment.
Nade watched it. didn't see it.
Didn't see it.
Loki Season 2.
Can't comment.
Meh.
Fine. The Marvels.
Yeah.
It was sad. Yeah.
Yay. I give that one a yay. Echo.
Didn't watch
Can't comment.
Meh. Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yay.
Fun, but not needed.
Shut up. Yay. Agatha. Not needed? What the? Piss off. We got Wolverine back.
I'm sorry. In the concept of this concept of Phase 5, it was not needed. It could have just been a standalone movie.
Okay. And, all right.
Yeah.
I thought we weren't going to be friends anymore.
It did nothing for the phase.
All right.
Put it that way.
Agatha All Along.
Did not watch it.
Yay. That was actually
I didn't need a sequel of a sequel of a sequel.
It was solid. It was completely different. Aubrey Plaza is really good, too. Daredevil, Born Again, Season 1.
Didn't watch it.
Wow, the TV side really lost a lot of people. I give it a meh. The last four episodes, very good, because Punisher shows back up. That's the only time it got really good. And your Daredevil show shouldn't be great when another character shows up.
But that was the same with the first Daredevil, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It sure was. I was not a huge fan of Daredevil. Captain America, Brave New World.
No.
Meh.
Meh. Thunderbolts.
Yay.
That's sick. I put that as like number two. Best in the phase, to Troy's point, but number two in terms of movies overall, personally.
Yes.
I actually like it more than Guardians Volume 3, I think. Ironheart.
Didn't see it.
Didn't watch it.
It's actually, she's very good. Riri is very good. The show is written terribly. Just so you know, it's very bad writing. So, you know, people were like, it's review bombing. Maybe, but it's also just a terribly written show. All right. So overall thoughts, but she's great. I hope she still sticks around. Just like the cast of the Marvels. I think they were all great in that too. And I'm sorry the movie flopped, but man, it was a very good movie. I don't care what anyone on the internet says. Overall thoughts, guys. What do you think? Marvel Phase 5. Where do you land on this now that you've actually had all the titles put in front of you? And it really sounded from the reactions, it's mid, as the kids would say.
It's
John,
mid,
I learned a new word. Don't hate, all right? Don't hate the player.
This phase definitely did not slap, that's for sure.
I used the word bet in a sentence in front of a bunch of young people, and it got me into a weird place. So I get it.
Were you making one?
No, but I said bet, and I've never used it before in my life about something, and they were like, oh my god, the old man is saying bet, and I'm like, bro, that's been around since before you guys were born.
It came back around.
Well,
those guys are so mid, you know what I mean?
They're so mid. Yeah. They absolutely are. It's very much like a weird spot where Marvel's very mid, as you as the parlance that you said. And it's disappointing because at one point they were like a great staple of quality, and I think this reflects.
Don't feign to understand me.
I'm sorry. That's a
callback.
That's a callback. It's always a great callback when you have to go, that's a callback. I understood that reference. This goes back to what we talked about, though. This is that oversaturation from TV shows that's really kind of like killed it.
I agree. Yeah,
I'd also say it was direction in this phase, because the coming out of Phase 4, it was like, what are we doing? And then Phase 5 didn't happen because of certain outside of the movie area issues, and then had to kind of like redirect and rewrite. And so this was just kind of like, we put out content to put out content. There wasn't a cohesive story.
Yeah. So Phase 4 was about grief and transition, right? Phase 5 should have been about searching for the new center of the world. Who's going to be leading our universe now? Who's going to be leading our teams now? Mm-hmm. And that's what they definitely tried to do. And it's just, unfortunately, because of this oversaturation, we have no leaders still. There's no clear upfront. You don't have an Iron Man. You don't have a Captain America that everyone's rallying behind, unfortunately. Even though I believe Anthony Mackie as Captain America is great, but nobody's really stepping up and being like, this is where we need to be right now. Because one of the best movies they made was about a bunch of characters no one gives a crap about, and they still didn't convince it. I mean, they convinced some people who were true hardcore fans to be like, no, this is great, but they didn't convince a lot of other people to be like, this is why we need to keep watching this stuff.
Agreed. I mean, Thunderbolts didn't really... It might break even at the box office. It might. And it's very close to, it's basically not making money. And, you know, Florence Pugh, I think, could be the next leader. I think Yelena is really the one character. I mean, I guess you could have Wolverine, but I think Hugh Jackman is really, he's going to do an Avengers movie and be done, I'm sure. But give him a real send off. Let him do a real big Marvel cartoon film or comic book film. I apologize. Not a cartoon film.
How dare you?
I know. For shame, shame, shame. Is Hannah Waddingham here? But Florence Pugh, I think, could be the leader. Riri, I think, really could if people would go to see her. Captain Marvel just doesn't click with people anymore for whatever reason. And you're right. There really isn't a strong leader. And Guardians was a strong ensemble, but they kind of put that out to pasture. And you're not going to get several of those actors back except for Peter Quill. Deadpool is not meant to be a leader. He's meant to be a disruptor of sorts. So, yeah, you don't really have one. Now, Fantastic Four, I think if they do it right and they find a way to finally make this franchise really successful, I think it could be. They could be. Reed Richards and the family, they could be the next Iron Man, etc.
But it's still an ensemble. That's the problem.
I'm not sold. I'm not sold on the idea of Fantastic Four being the place where we need to be going. And I'm not sold on where it is going to be because it seems like another multiverse movie. And I think that's what's hurting us right now, right? The multiverse is one of those things on top of the oversaturation. When you make nothing matter, then you don't make it interesting anymore. And that's what the multiverse does. Is it makes nothing matter anymore.
Agreed.
Agree. However, I do like the Fantastic Four coming in because I think one of our problems is that we've gotten to the point where we have gotten past the first tier of heroes at this point, and we're into that second tier of heroes. Now is the time that we move into the world of Fantastic Four, X-Men, the ensemble type groups, and we live in that space for a little while before we come back to the Captain Americas of the world and the singular focused type characters. Because I think what you're seeing is, you know, DC is going to come on the map with Superman. And you're going to get Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman and the reboots of all of this stuff coming down the line where it's again individual focused. Counter program that with X-Men, Fantastic Four, the new Avengers, and be in that kind of space for a while. Just have some good Rock'em Sock'em Robot type adventures.
Because if you look at this list, in terms of just sheer success, Ant-Man, bomb, Guardians hit, Secret Invasion, bomb, Loki season 2 critical hit. I don't know how the ratings were in that. The Marvels, huge bomb. Echo, never really heard much talk about it. Deadpool and Wolverine, massive hit. Agatha All Along, solid. Daredevil, solid. Captain America Brave New World was about like Thunderbolts. It broke even, basically. Barely. But actually, the budget was so huge, it actually lost money. And then Ironheart has not been, you know, getting great reviews. So, I mean, you have an overall underwhelming phase. It's a downward spiral for Marvel.
Yeah, and all of this is basically built off of stuff that's been happening in MCU all along, right? So we talked about Agatha All Along as a sequel of a sequel of a sequel, right? Deadpool's been around for a while. It's the third volume of Guardians. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, Loki is coming all the way back from Thor, and it's where's the new, right?
Okay, so let me ask you this.
The Thunderbolts was new. Like, that's cool. I like the new, even though it still kind of carries on a little bit. But like Fantastic Four is new. So it's exciting because it's shiny and new.
Well, it's a rehash new. That's a three times over rehash.
Yeah, but that was at Fox. We don't talk about it.
Well, we don't talk about Fox.
Well, they can absolutely utilize very unknown comic heroes and be successful. Guardians, nobody in the real world knew who Guardians of the Galaxy were. Nobody. And that was a massive franchise. Iron Man was not super popular with normal comic book fans. Yes, many diehards know exactly who Iron Man was, but he was not popular in the normal everyday Joe America. You know what I mean? Batman, Superman, those are the staples. Those are the ones that always bring tickets in. Even when they don't do well, they still did a little well. You know what I mean? And these are like very, very little known characters. Ant-Man did pretty well. Captain America, they made relevant again. I mean, so they can absolutely bring these things back to life if they just get the right people behind them. But I think what's happening is actually it's a great opportunity that James Gunn and Peter Safran seized on, because now is a good time to relaunch DC, because Marvel's on the downswing. They don't really have to compete with Marvel. They just have to make some hits.
Make enough money to keep making movies.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Do you guys think that Marvel's going to be able to really kick things off again with Fantastic Four? Do you guys really believe that's going to be the possibility?
Well, I guess the question is, does kick what off? Right. I think this is the problem we talked about with Star Wars too. It's like you go to the something like Planet of the Apes, and the distance that the Planet of the Apes movies have from each other really keeps apes exciting, because it isn't something every single minute coming in your face all the time.
You should choose your words better.
Hey, is what it is. You're the one that read into it. Sorry, and it actually brought it up onto the podcast. I was just going to keep going and ignore it, because I know what I said. I was like, yeah, just keep going. Ron Burgundy, that shit. The big thing is that they have to distance itself. They have to make it. We talked about, put it in the Disney vault, keep it away for a little bit, make it exciting and come back. Right. So
sure.
Fantastic Four probably won't do as well because it's still too close to everything, but then like wait a year or two for something new to come out. Don't make a TV show like the next month.
I mean, this is what, the third iteration. We don't count the first movie. Although we had an interview with the director of that original, the documentary of that lost Fantastic Four movie somewhere in the feed. It's really good. You should go listen to it. Marty Langford. This is the third iteration in 25 years of this franchise that wasn't huge ever to begin with. I think it's huge in comic book lovers' eyes. I don't think it's huge in the rest of the world's eyes. When I've talked to other comic fans, I just don't think Fantastic Four is the one. Now, I think Spider-Man can bring a lot of things back to life. Spider-Man is just universally beloved. Always has been, always will be. Fantastic Four, I think the movie has to be great and has to have great word of mouth and long legs, because I think otherwise it's going to open big and fall fast.
That wasn't a stretchy comment.
No, it was not. It definitely has to stretch out those legs. Yes, it does. And I don't think it'll do it. I think actually this is a great time for DC to seize control of the comic book industry, movie industry. But also what I think, and this is, I think it's been shown for the last 2 years, people are really, it's becoming Westerns. Comic book movies are becoming Westerns. You got to do something different and unique or people aren't there. You can't just say I'm Marvel anymore.
Yeah, no, you've got to really challenge them, and that's the thing that Marvel's got away from, because they gotten away from the idea of challenging people. And it's hard, because like we live in such a world now where if you challenge people in one way or another, it starts being labeled as something it's completely not. And that's what kind of DC is running into now with some of this, like some of the labeling from the political side of it.
It's because James Gunn said it's an immigrant story and they said, no, it's super woke, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's,
it is an immigrant story.
It's literally an immigrant story, you know.
Go read the comics, man. I don't know what to tell you. That's all he's saying. But anyway,
whether he's an alien or he's from Kansas, either way,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, either way. Also written by Canadians, so created by Canadians. So go figure how people are like going to be like, it's an American institution. No, he's written by Canadians, guys.
I mean, it is both of those things. It can be both of those things. I think immigrants are, anyway, they're absolutely part of the American story. But go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying that it's Superman was, you know, the United States doesn't own any sort of ownership on Superman when he was created by a bunch of Canadians. So that's it. Like, that's all I'm saying. But I lost my point and I'm going to shut up.
Well, now. He's a good leader. He's a leader for the DC. They have they started with, this is our definitive leader. Apparently, he's crushing it. We're going to talk about that in a minute. So there is something to build off of. And what you said earlier, I think, is the pivotal point. If you don't have a leader cemented by the end of Fantastic Four, I think they struggle. because right now, you're right, they don't have one. Now, Florence Pugh, I think, could be that one, but I don't know if Thunderbolts is big enough to put her in that position.
No, I don't think it is. She does have the gravitas on screen to be able to draw the kind of attention to be
she is. People have to find it, man. They really have to find her.
Yeah, she has all the heart. She has everything, but it's the character herself isn't. It'll be an interesting way of doing it. I think that could be the challenge. Like, let's take this completely human character that has some
abilities.
Some abilities that can be considered preternatural, maybe you can call it that or not, and make her, even though she's not a big character in the comics, let's make her the leader and the heart of this whole thing. And it's possible she could do it. She's the reason why Thunderbolts worked, was because she was all the heart.
Mm-hmm. But you also need to have a Thanos if you want to have a phase. If you want to make a whole phase of movies, you need a bad guy or a bad girl or a bad thing.
I don't know.
Need something to rally around.
Dr. Doom is coming. I'm sure he's going to be teased in Fantastic Four. I am certain of it.
Sure.
I don't think you have a Fantastic Four movie and not have at least a stinger of Dr. Doom. And give us our first look at Robert Downey Jr. because they want to get people talking and showing up butts in seats so they can start pimping that Dr.
Which Doom also movie. Is their dumbest thing they ever did.
What?
Was to bring back an actor who played a different character in this universe to play a different character.
Yeah, we've talked about that. That is a mistake, I think.
Yeah.
But that's phase six. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes in phase
more
six.
More like I'm going to phase out.
Wow. All right. On that note, it's time to move on. So Patreon fans, if you're a Patreon supporter, you get bonus content. We have a bonus episode that's going to be dropping there shortly. Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses come from our own pockets. And Patreon helps fans support those shows. Just go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And it's been very busy. And I know we haven't gotten a couple of things out there and just recently, but we've got a bonus episode coming out and hopefully a bad movie night shortly thereafter. So keep an eye on those. Now, let's go to our whole game before we get to some upcoming attractions and Superman. We're going to play Why Did You Say That Word? Or I should say, Why Did You Say That Word? Because as we all know, Martha is the name that stopped Batman from killing Superman and Batman versus Superman and basically blew up the DCEU. It started its downfall. And since we all agree that it might not have been really sufficient, we're going to play a game where we each get to pick one word. Any word, one word, John and Roy, you both can't just do one word that would have stopped Batman from kryptoniting Soup's ass on that rooftop. Any word at all, Troy.
Bratwurst.
Okay, might have caught him off guard for a second. I could maybe see it. John?
Pearls.
Okay, that's basically like Martha, but deeper.
But so much deeper. So it would throw Bruce into a quick trauma spiral, but at least it would stop attacking.
Okay. I could go with that. All right, here's mine. And I will tell you, this will, if I was attacking Superman and I had the upper hand and I was about to win, this is the word that would stop me. And I think, I mean, it would stop most people. Moist. And you have to say it like that.
Moist.
And I think that would solve some problems. All right, Trey, we're going to hop into some upcoming attractions, and then we're pretty close to Superman, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's coming out next weekend. You know what we all did last summer, because I know what you did last summer, as does everybody else, because it's coming back again, peeps. That's right. It's a reboot. It's a whole new group of kids, but yet some returning characters as well, as they're bound by a tragic accident, reunited when they find themselves stalked by a hook-wielding maniac in their small town. Yes, Jennifer Love Hewitt comes on back, as well as Jennifer Caton Robinson and Madeline Klein will be here. So check out I Know What You Did Last Summer next weekend. And if that doesn't float your boat, you can check out Eddington. It's a story that follows a small town New Mexico sheriff with higher aspirations. Emma Stone is in this one. It's directed by Ari Aster. Pedro Pascal, Joaquin Phoenix are also around. So check that out. Do not go see Smurfs. It looks awful. I can't even
Smurf
read.
Smurf you! Looks amazing.
I can't even read it. Nope.
The Go trailer, Smurf yourself.
The trailer, like, no. Sound effect Smurf? Sound effect Smurf never existed, okay? The trailer is so bad.
How dare you?
It does. It's a terrible trailer.
It's a terrible trailer. Gargamel looks like an idiot and like a buffoon. Like, no. I mean,
the Gargamels always look like a buffoon, number one.
He looks worse.
There are several Gargamels in this movie. So
worse than a buffoon.
So they found the multiverse in the Smurf world.
The Smurfyverse?
The Smurfyverse.
The Smurfverse, yeah.
Where there are several different Gargamel's, and apparently there's like a couple of different Papa Smurfs.
This is one more
of
those terrible.
Voice by Ron Swanson. I'll go for
this. Yeah, even more terrible.
It's not Papa Smurf, Grandpa Smurf. It's like weird Smurfs. I don't know.
I'd rather
have them all bit on the tail and just be purple and go gnat for 90 minutes, and it would be much more enjoyable than what I saw in the trailer.
True story.
But Smurfs is coming out next weekend. Go take your kids. Guns up.
Love your kids better. Love them better.
Guns Up is a limited release. When a job goes horribly wrong, an ex-cop and family man who moonlights as a mob henchman has one night to get his family out of the city with Kevin James and Christina Ricci.
I did watch this trailer because I didn't think it was going to theaters. Okay. And Christina Ricci is the only reason I want to see it. And Kevin James, actually, he can do bad. I mean, was it Becky? He was pretty good in Becky, if you saw that. And here, he's trying to be a badass, and I get it. He's got the look, but Christina Ricci gets to do some badassery, and I want to see her get an action movie. Like, I think she looks great, but I've got a crush on her since I was a kid. Sorry. I just got personal and went through therapy for.
I mean, you're right though, because like her stint on Yellow Jackets is like top notch. She's the only reason to watch Yellow Jackets, in my opinion, because she's just freaking crazy.
You love the first season.
The first season is great, and then it focused too much on the adults. I don't want to watch adults. I wanted to watch the kids in the woods.
Okay.
Much more interesting.
We should unpack that someday. Go ahead.
Not tonight.
Terrible.
What's left?
That's it. Unless you want to stay at home and watch some stuff on streaming, you can watch Untamed, a miniseries over on Netflix. Kyle Turner, an investigative services branch agent of the National Park Service, is on the hunt for a killer, one who knows Yosemite National Park as well as he does. However, the dark secrets lurking in both Kyle and the park's past may be just as dangerous as the murderer. This one has Eric Bena and Sam Neill, so it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, it's July 17th. I'm very excited about that because I love my parks and a good murder mystery. So, bam.
Sounds like you'll be joining me in that therapy session then.
I might. What you been watching? Anything that you guys want to talk about? All right. So, I saw Heads of State. John also saw Heads of State. It's on Amazon Prime. I am telling you, you should go watch this one. But let me tell you what it's about. You have John Cena, who is a celebrity turned president. He's basically an action hero. He's not someone who's been in action. He's just played an action hero. So he thinks he knows action, but he doesn't. And he's the president of the United States. Very hopeful, very uplifting, but very inexperienced. And then you have Idris Elba, who plays Sam Clark, who's the prime minister. And he doesn't like John Cena's character. He doesn't like Will Derringer, is John Cena's character's name. And they don't get along at all. And he has been in combat, and he wants to make change. He wants to make real effective change. He's just burnt out because he never seems to. Well, what happens is they're on their way to a NATO conference, and they are attacked on Air Force One. Fantastic set piece, by the way. I think the set pieces in this movie are actually really fun, really thrilling. And they go on the run, and they have to find out who set them up, who is after them, who is the bad guy here. And I want to tell you that this is currently on Prime. I don't like streaming originals typically. Rarely will I rewatch a streaming original because they're usually pretty just okay, right? This was a movie I would have paid double to see in a theater. I had an absolute blast. I loved every second of it. These two have great chemistry. I know they were in Suicide Squad as Bloodsport and Peacemaker, but it's a different kind of chemistry here. They really kind of get to show their hearts a little bit. I think John Cena is actually a president I could get behind. I'd vote for him at this point. You know what I mean? I thought it was a really fun, really thrilling movie. What'd you think?
Oh, it was great. And one of my favorite set pieces that they did on this is that there was a very, I almost hate to say it, but Grand Budapest Hotel. Remember who that was? I know
Wes Anderson?
Him. Yes. There's two moments in there, very Wes Anderson, where they're telling the story of how somebody gets from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And the way they executed it, I was like, I really love this. I really love how they're poking fun at themselves and how they're poking fun at the whole genre of the movies. And it is just a really good time. It is John Cena has done no wrong as far as like movies and television goes, and he continues to do great. Idris Elba, I still understand exactly what women see in him. So, yeah, it was a good time.
I was absolutely thrilled. And it's funny. I legit had 4 belly laughs. Anyone who's listened to the show for a long time, I might chuckle. I don't belly laugh. I just don't. Hardly ever. And I freaking lost it 4 times. Counted. There's a lot of good humor in here. There's a lot of good jokes, and I love a good buddy action flick, and this is one. Go check that out. $10 full price admission. I give that one $8.50. I loved it. I don't know what you, John.
I get $8.
Okay. So it's a good time. So check it out. Troy?
I have a Tale of Two Cities. City number one is Squid Game, the finale, Korean version.
Land the plane?
Lands the plane extremely well.
Okay.
The second season was rough, to say the least. I didn't like a lot of the characters. I didn't like a lot of the way that they were handling the democratic voting process. There was just a lot of it that was weird compared to the first season. This last season, episode two has the feels like the Marvel episode did in season one. So you're definitely like, oh my God, did that just happen? It kind of feels right. Mm-hmm. And then the way that the finale kind of plays itself out, there's actually a lot post the quote unquote ending, we'll say. There's probably another 15 minutes of content after that. And that sets up some really interesting things as you think about the whole world as a whole. I think one of the things that came out of this is what happens at the very, very end, which is, the head of the game actually finding a spot in Los Angeles, and they see a American recruiter doing the, I forget what the name of the game's called, where they slap the cards or the thing on top of each other to get it flip over. But there's an American recruiter, Monty. And they kind of look at each other like, I know you and I know you kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's been spoiled like crazy if you're on the social media, by the way.
Yeah, so see social media. I'm not going to ruin it for anybody that doesn't want to. But there is rumor of David Fincher doing an American version of Squid Games. So the hubbub now was the surprise cameo at the end of the series a lead-in of who would potentially be in the American version, or was it just somebody that was like, oh, hi, I'm here for this like 2-second shot? So there's a lot of chatter on the internet now about like who this was, what the speculation of the future could be. The Korean creator was basically talking about it. I think it lands up playing great. Like, I was really surprised at where it ended and how it all played out.
Well, good. I'm glad that they wrapped it up.
On the other side of the coin, in the other city, is Smoke, Apple TV Plus's new series that just dropped. And it says Journey Smollett and Taron Egerton, I believe they're doing their best Backdraft impression, I think is the way I'm going to talk about it right now. The first episode is an hour and 10 minutes. It's very long, very drawn out. Not how I would have done a pilot episode, but you have to introduce a lot of things because there's backstory as to why she's interested in investigating fire. And then there's backstory why he's interested in investigating fire and his relationship with his current wife, who is divorced with another guy. And there's just a lot of stuff going on. So you're trying to understand the world in that first episode. And the meanwhile, there are two arsonists who are basically torching the city. So their job is to basically go find these two arsonists. And Journey's character basically has to bring in a big whale, otherwise she's basically going to be kicked off the force. And so she's kind of bending the rules and whatnot in order to see what she has to see in order to make things happen. But it's entertaining enough. It's not my typical Apple TV Plus fodder, but I would say I'm going to give it the fourth episode and see what happens, because the third episode actually was pretty decent.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Well, now it's time for a little truth, justice, and the American way, or a better tomorrow, or whatever you want the tagline to be.
Canadian way?
Whatever you want. I don't care. It's time to talk about Superman. All right, now we're going to talk about Superman. You already know John and I, but also Scott Clark is joining us, former host of The Hollywood Outsider and also current host of The Gaming Outsider. Welcome, Scott.
Well, hey, what's going on, Aaron and John?
Hey, buddy.
I'm really here to see John. Let's be honest.
I don't give a shit. But yeah. I'm here to talk about Superman, and I'm going to make this real easy because, look, we're going to give an overall quick review so people that haven't seen it or whatever just know how we feel about it, and then can make their if they're waiting to base an opinion, or if they buy a ticket on that, then they'll know. And then we're just going to dive into the movie, spoilers free, or weapons free, however you want to call it. But the plot of Superman is Superman must reconcile his alien Kryptonian heritage with his human upbringing as reporter Clark Kent As the embodiment of truth, justice, and the human way, oh, look, they changed it. He soon finds himself in a world that views these as old-fashioned. It's written and directed by James Gunn, who, of course, we've already talked about, is rebooting DC Studios. This is their big, really big launching pad for the new DC Universe. So overall, we've seen it. All three of us have seen it. We come from different worlds. I think I really like the Snyderverse. John really likes the Snyderverse. Scott, did you like the Snyderverse?
I wasn't a fan of the Snyder Cut. What was the Snyder Cut controversy movie?
Justice League.
Justice League. I thought that was a little over the top weird.
Did you watch the Snyder Cut?
No.
Okay, then that's... Okay. You didn't watch the Snyder Cut. You watched the Justice League.
Exactly. Anyway, so right. Not a big fan. I get it. Too dark for you. Got it. So this one, you can start us off. What did you think? This is just overall thoughts. Then we're going to get into spoilers, so we don't have to sit here and dance around.
Well, I got to preface my thoughts on this with one important fact. I missed the last portion of this movie because we had this.
Which portion?
I saw the wrap up, I saw the finale, the resolution of the big stuff going on. I missed any aftermath after that. The theater lost power because of a storm that came through. Ooh. And I have not had a chance to go in and rewatch it yet because there's still storms coming through.
But you saw the ending. You saw the resolution. So that's the overall movie. There wasn't much.
I saw the overall resolution. There's just stuff that I would like to see, and I'm obviously missing the after credits. So here's my take on Superman. I unfortunately saw a couple people talk about things as I was looking at Twitter before I got here, and I hope I'm not in the minority because I freaking love this movie. I thought it was awesome, and I know that I'm the guy here that has no connection to the characters outside of the older Superman movies. I don't know any of the villains other than Lex Luthor, obviously. I was entertained from start to finish in this. Now, granted, part of this is I just got out of Mission Impossible yesterday, which took 45 minutes to get going. You know what I mean? And Jurassic Park even had Jurassic World, excuse me, had a long gap in the beginning. There was no lulls in this movie for me. I was constantly entertained. I thought it was very funny. I thought the action was amazing, even though, I want to save that thought for spoiler territory, but I found myself fully engaged the entire time, and I really enjoyed it. By the way, saw it in IMAX 3D. Ooh. I don't know if you guys did.
I did not, but Brian Williams, former host, he messaged me right before I went into mine because he saw it in IMAX 3D and said, if you get to see it in IMAX 3D, it's awesome. And I was not able to.
It was pretty good. It was pretty solid in IMAX 3D. I haven't seen a 3D movie in a while, so I've kind of forgot about it, but it was quite good.
When it's done right, it can be fantastic.
There was only one or two spots where something felt like it was coming at you, for effect. Mm-hmm. It just felt like the immersion.
That's 3D. What it should be. That's what it should be. It shouldn't be, Jaws 3D, where the shark's just coming at your head. It shouldn't be like that.
So I'm genuinely curious to hear what you guys think.
Well, what did you give it score-wise? $10 full price of admission. What do you give it? You remember the score. You know how this works.
I do. If $10 were the full price of admission, I would probably go $8.50.
Okay.
I really, really like this movie. And again, that's coming from a guy that has no connections to the source material, very little connections to the source material. So I want to know what you guys think.
John, what do you say? Now, we both love the Henry Cavill.
A lot of the things that I liked about this movie, the pacing of it was pretty well done. I wasn't bored at any single moment. It carried me from point A to point B expertly in the way that James Gunn does, almost to a beat of a song, even though there's not music playing throughout the whole thing. I liked a little bit of jokes here and there, and I like overall the story. It gives a different spin. Actually, it gives a much more fuller spin on Superman when it comes to what the story ended up being. I do have to say that though this may not be my favorite actor playing Superman, this may end up being my favorite iteration of Superman because they captured so many things about Big Blue that I didn't think they were gonna bother capturing overall, his personality style or even his ability just to see the world in a certain way. And they even tell a great story as to why he is the way he is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
everything about it was great. And I did appreciate the fact that we had some side characters that are smaller characters in the DC universe. Some of them are a little bit more popular, but still, like, we had them here. Well, with the exception of one character, they didn't really distract you too much. They added to the story in a great way. Yeah, I really had a lot of fun with it. My score for it would have been about $8.
Okay. So I walk in, and you know, obviously I love my Henry Cavill, and I'm open to this. I've already resigned myself. It's a new reboot. Let's see if they can get me jazzed about Superman for the 14th time. I will say, I think it's a very good film. James Gunn, I really like his approach to it, because there's a lot of ways he could have went, and when he says, you know, we don't give you the whole history lesson of who Superman is, he means it. They don't do that. They actually, it almost. The movie basically, without spoiling it, really opens with you assuming you already know about this world, because you're just kind of like dropped in the middle of it. And at first, I'm like, I think this is a, I don't know if this is a good way to start this, but I think it really pays off because it helps with the pacing, because it feels like you're already in the middle of it. Where I think other writers and directors probably would have given you a 45 minutes of a preamble to get to where we were, you know, which would have added to the runtime, like you were talking about, Scott. Or would have done something like 3 days earlier, you know, whatever. I really like that he just skipped the, got right to the heart of it and kept things going. What's that?
It was literally on the screen.
Yeah. He literally just wrote it out. You know, he's like three centuries, 3 decades, 3 weeks, or whatever. So he's basically giving you a big story.
But to your point, even if you don't know the origin of Superman, you have enough information to still be fine for
absolutely.
This movie.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a kid and you don't know, you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. I like the humor. I really love David Corenswet as Superman. I think he did a great job. I'm even more impressed with Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane, because I think she might actually trump Margot Kidder for me, which is saying something.
I thought she was fantastic.
She was absolutely fantastic. And Jimmy Olsen, I actually care about Jimmy Olsen for once, because the dude's got Riz, you know? And so that was a fun little addition. There's a lot. Plus, I mean, Crypto. You know, you've seen the dog. I think it's funny that we have an entire CGI dog when there's like plenty of real ones out there, but whatever. This is absolutely delightful. And like Rocket Raccoon, he feels very real. Overall, really enjoyed it. Negatives would be, though, the plot is super overstuffed. I think there's too many things going on. I'm really sick of multiverses. I'm just being fair. That's my knee-jerk reaction to anything where there's a different kind of verse, and there is a different kind of verse in this movie. But overall, I still really enjoyed it. If $10 full price admission, I would give it $7. I don't think it's better than Man of Steel. I really love Man of Steel. And I'll jump right into spoilers, because spoilers are open, guys. We're not going to talk about it. So if you haven't seen it, turn this off. I don't want you to listen any further, because we're just going to jump right into it. One thing that is, I'll start with my most negative, the trunks. I'm sick to death of those stupid red trunks. They look terrible in the costume. I don't care if it's been part of Superman for 85 years. Man of Steel got rid of the trunks. Finally, that suit looks sleek. Now we're back to the trunks, and it looks like a freaking, I don't know, sleeping costume.
I never even like thought of that
pajamas.
Once I while did watching this movie
the whole time. My wife thought,
you know, the thing. I mean, I'm with you. I hate the idea of the trunks, and I'm totally against.
You're not even utilitarian. What's the purpose of them? You wear your underwear on the outside. I don't understand, Superman.
However, I did watch a.
That's why Luke's left or hate you, Lex Luthor, not Lex Luthor.
Lux Luthor.
I did watch an interview with James Gunn and David Corenswet, and they were talking about the fact that James Gunn was trying to get rid of the trunks. He didn't want the trunks, but he didn't want the trunks at all.
He didn't
want anything to do with the trunks, but the costume still wasn't working. And finally, David Corenswet says, you know, maybe he wears the trunks to make himself look a little silly so that people take him more seriously.
No, he's trying to justify why he's stuck wearing them, and he doesn't want to make his director look bad. They look terrible. It's a very ugly costume aesthetic. I'm sorry. And that's my most negative thing about the movie. And if that's the most negative, then that's not so bad, right?
It's not so bad. The only time I ever paid attention to the trunks were like when they're carrying him and they carry him into the Fortress of Solitude Spread Eagle, and you're getting like a close-up shot of his junk.
Like, yeah, they're not even super tight. They're a little loose. Like they're You can't even buy fitting shorts, man. Like, I just don't like the costume.
Well, the whole costume isn't super tight.
I don't like the costume at all in this one. I don't. But, okay. I mean, I like him a lot. So I'm just saying, I'm starting with my most negative. Like that costume sucks. I'm like, God, this looks like pajamas, man. This doesn't even look like a costume.
I was more distracted by the boots. But there's no way that those boots are helpful.
I think we just turn this whole episode into Queer Eye and we start critiquing all the costumes. We just go through it fashion by fashion by fashion.
I didn't take one look at the boots once, so I can't comment on that.
It was mostly in that opening shot when he's on the ground, you know, after getting his ass kicked by
the Hammer Bavaria, which turned out to be Ultraman.
Yeah.
And then turned out to be
him. I am.
Yeah.
That'd be my other negative. The whole cloning aspect, I get sick of that.
That's an original bit from the comic book. So Ultraman was a clone of Superman.
I still don't care. It's still I still think it's terrible.
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see. There we go. That's just my take on it. I don't like multiverses. I don't like twins, aka clones. I don't like those in anything. It's not just this.
Though they hinted at the idea of a multiverse or dimensional thing, you know, the whole pocket dimension thing. That whole pocket dimension thing is something that's been in DC since the beginning, and it avoids the multiverse in a lot of ways. It's different than a multiverse.
It's not. So it's really not. I mean, it's not. It's not. It's a totally separate universe, and they get to use it. And it's a
pocket dimension.
It's an escape from having to explain things.
Well, it's the same thing the first Ant-Man did, or the second Ant-Man did with like the shrinking the
quantum
down
realm.
The tiny quantum realm. It's the same thing as a quantum realm. Dude,
you could keep like throwing out. Well, it was in the comics, or it was in other movies and stuff. But it doesn't make me like it more. I still just don't like that aspect of it.
I think what he's trying to say is that the quantum realm is different than an alternate universe. The quantum realm is like the shrunk down version of whatever.
Right. The quantum realm, the way Marvel uses it, it's practically a pocket dimension, which is the same thing they did here, only they did just call it a pocket dimension.
So basically you're saying that pocket dimensions and the quantum realm are more closely related than a pocket dimension in an all end.
Yes.
Well, because a multiverse theoretically is you have doppelgangers of each character in each one. Right. Yeah, I get the difference. I'm just saying it's just another way for them to dance around any kind of story by just creating whimy-timey nonsense. But it's my take. It's my take.
Right. My big negative really was Lex Luthor on this.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, Scott and I are aligned. That's not often.
Oh, my God. I thought Lex was great.
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic.
Well, like,
I think he's better than Hackman, dude, because I actually felt like he gave a shit. Like, he was in it. Not better than Gene Hackman as a whole, by the way. Just, you know.
Especially after the Jesse Eisenberg Lex Luthor, I expected to see more of a refined, controlled, something that has its own, his own like stature to himself, that, you know, is like a stalwart statue of like just strength and humankind in front of you. But he's
how
this
did he
whiny
not have
twerp.
That? Everybody did what he was commanded, like,
right. Well, I think he's saying that there wasn't a humanity to him. He didn't have a human side. It was really just monster, right? That's kind of what
it was. Really just
to.
Monster throwing tantrums and just being a bitch about everything.
Mm. So this is, you know, because this is a reboot of Superman, right? So this is the first time Lex Luthor has been a villain in this version, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this isn't like Lex Luthor has been thwarted in the past. Because nobody knew he was bad until this one, right?
Correct.
Like
that's the story. Yeah.
So he does. So this is supposed to be our introduction to him, where he's not going to have been established. You know what I mean? He's not. He's a young Lex Luthor.
Yeah. No. See, that's I don't care about that.
I'm with Lex Luthor. I kind of get what you're saying. You're basically I think I get what you're saying. You're basically alluding to he's just an evil genius this whole movie, and you don't get any sense of him being having any kind of personality outside of that.
It's not only just that, but it's more so like he's supposed to be a creature of composure and strength, and he doesn't give that off at all. He gives more manic and frustrated and petulant than anything else.
he shoves coffee mugs with pencils in them off the desk.
Dude, yeah, that was
makes
funny.
Them clean it
that
up.
That was super funny.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, that's what the egomaniac would do.
Yeah. Well, and you know, if you compare it to the second time we see Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, you see him with the shaved head. He's wearing the tight suit. He's very well controlled, and he's like, and he's just very, very in his presence the second time we see him. So that's why I was like, all right, why aren't we going that direction? Why are we going to this like petulant child? I'm jealous of Superman. ideology that he's got, as opposed to like just being this like incredibly smart. That was the supposed to be the difference between Superman and Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor was supposed to be incredibly smart, and so smart to be able to outthink him. You see where I'm going? I'm losing my words, but you see
what
I'm going?
No, I understand what you're saying. I think this is where my disconnect with the original source material is helpful. Making me like this character better, because I don't have that comparison. I in my mind, because I haven't, it's been so long since I've seen the original movie, you know, or any of the other ones, even with Lex Luthor. So since I've seen multiple iterations, but I don't really know which one is the most accurate.
Michael Rosenbaum.
Michael Rosenbaum, which film
Michael is that? Rosenbaum.
Yeah, he was fantastic in Smallville. Actually, I love Gene Hackman. He's one of my favorite actors of all time. But his Lex Luthor, I'm sure people were like, that's just you sacrilege. He's the best. I thought he was actually a terrible Lex Luthor, just because he just seemed like he was there for the paycheck, number one. He was entertaining, but I just never felt like he was any kind of real threat. So
gotcha.
I feel like this Lex Luthor came across as a real threat. Now, I agree, it doesn't really get much outside of the villain aspect, but I also don't care because I'm there for a comic book movie, and if I have to let the Pocketverse shit slide, I'll let this go. This is far less concerning to me than the stupid multiple universes that we have to deal with.
Well, while we're talking about characters, can we touch a little bit more on the character of Superman himself? I know you guys talked about
there.
It in
you hold
the,
up. Oh, we're gonna get
that's,
there. Yeah.
That's the last okay. one. You don't go to Big Blue just yet.
Okay. I have thoughts.
Okay. Well, we all have thoughts, sir. What did you think of the henchmen, Ultraman and the Engineer? I mean, I'm glad that there was somebody that was formidable for Superman, and then we ultimately get that, obviously, you know, he's a clone, and it makes sense how he can get into the Ice Palace and everything else, the Fortress of Solitude. I know what it's called. Nerds, calm down. But, like, what did you think of those two? Did they work for you? Like, did you see them as a real threat, or were they just, you know, fodder?
To me, they're clearly a threat, but they didn't really add too much to the movie as far as, like, for the story. They were clearly puppets for Lex Luthor, and they played that role really well. So I didn't really like need them or not need them. They just helped carry the ball to the end field.
I don't know how you could not look at those villains as a threat. I was not expecting to see Superman get pummeled as much and as often as he does in this film.
His ass kicked this entire movie.
He was on his ass for a good portion of this movie.
I'm like, what would you do if you get your ass kicked at night? You'd just be sitting there crying all night long because there's no sun rays? I mean, come on. You're Superman. Get up.
Well, I mean, I don't know the lore. I don't know how accurate.
Well, he was being a little bitch a lot. So, you didn't see that scene where Supergirl shows up at the very end. There you go. Sorry.
Wait.
That's the one thing you did miss. Supergirl shows up at the very end. She has just gone partying on the red sun planets and calls him a little bitch. And she's the reason that dog is maniacal.
Yeah.
So you missed that scene. But that's a scene that happened.
Is that an after credits thing, or is that in the actual
movie? No, it's
the
end of the movie. Like,
it's the end of the movie.
So who played Supergirl, or is this the one?
Millie Alcott.
The one that was in the works for, there was a Supergirl movie at some point, wasn't
it's
there?
Being filmed.
There is a super movie.
It's already being
super
filmed. Millie Alcock, by the way. It's Alcock. It's not Alcott. And she was in House of the Dragon. You remember her. She was the young.
She was the young version of the.
Rhaenyra.
Yeah. Okay. I know who you're talking about. I did not like the Lex Luthor calling out codes for what attacks these guys were going
to do. The gamer doesn't like this? Because I wondered about that. I really did wonder what you were going to think about this, because I'm sitting here going, what kind of nonsense is he doing? Rock'em Sock'em Robots? That was the idea?
Well, the idea was, because we find out later.
No, I get the idea. He had spent time calculating his moves from other
planets. Right.
So I got
but you don't need to like call out codes to do that. Like, just...
Well, but what are they going to do? Like, uppercut, left, right, no.
No, just let the battle happen and watch Superman get his ass kicked. And we're like, why is this happening?
The one thing I do agree, I think it's kind of a dumb plot point. But I wish he would have had something where they armed them with like kryptonite in their hands or something along those lines. So it made sense why he was getting his ass kicked so much, because it really shouldn't matter that they have the idea.
Ultraman, he's fighting himself, and it makes sense as to why he's getting messed
that's
up.
That's why he can
Ultraman.
Anticipate his moves, and that's why.
But he doesn't anticipate his moves. He just does what he's told.
Right, But they also showed that part where like he is anticipating what Superman is doing. That's why Superman can't land any attacks, because he's fighting himself. Superman doesn't realize he's fighting himself, which is why he can't anticipate, because he doesn't know to look for that. But his clone is able to anticipate.
His clone is being directed, though. They're directing the clone.
For offense, yes. Not for defense.
Yeah, and there's also the clone has had to be taught how to fight. He's just being told where to fight, you know? So he had to understand all the codes.
Mm-hmm. Well, they see there's like 5,000 of them.
I can pick that plot point apart to death.
You can. I don't know what the purpose of picking it apart would be, but like you can.
Because it's a podcast, it's silly. We're supposed to discuss stuff, but you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Awesome. I know, but it's like, but like it is a little bit silly, but at the same time, I just let it happen because I just wanted to be in the story. So I was okay with it.
I was definitely in the story, but it doesn't mean that it's smart. Okay, fine. Here's something let's talk about Jimmy Olsen and the Riz. How about that, huh? This dude's got
game. That was hysterical.
Dude's got game. And I love that. Is it Tessmacher? Eve Tessmacher? She's like just all about Jimmy's digits. And I mean that literally. Like she just wants that time with Jimmy Olsen. The only downside to that is he's kind of a douche by playing her like that. He almost gets her killed. But I do love how smart she ends up being by taking pictures. Like her selfies are all basically just data points. And I think that was great.
Was she doing that intentionally along the way?
Yes, that's why I
she
think
was
so.
No, that's exactly what she was doing.
That's what she was doing.
Because she does not come across as a bright individual.
I think that was part of her game. Or maybe she's dumb and
why
smart.
Would she talk to him like that then?
I don't know. Tessmacher's always, she was kind of.
She's always flighty
like,
and
like
weird.
That in the movies. Yeah. I don't know about the comics, but I think she was in the comics though. Tessmacher was. I don't know. But, you know, she works for me. And I like Jimmy. I like that they gave Jimmy Olsen, like, a real character. They didn't just kill him in 5 minutes like they did in the Snyderverse.
Yeah, they totally made up for that.
They did. The parents, I do like this little aspect. I kind of want to talk on this. And I mean, like, both sets of parents. We have the one set of parents that, yes, kind of directed him to, hey, you know, take over the world. Do your thing. But also the human parents, which really are his real parents, which he learns by the end of the movie, which gives you that whole lovely montage where, did you see that, Scott? Please tell me you saw that.
The montage.
Oh, you didn't see that? Your power robbed you, man.
Because he missed Supergirl, so he's not going to have seen that, because that came after Supergirl.
At the very end, I'll explain it. He gets the robots put back together. He gets in his little chair of sunlight and sits back. And they said, play his parents, it soothes them, just like it happened at the beginning, you know, with mm-hmm. Bradley Cooper and yeah. whatnot. And instead of those parents, it's his human parents that start coming up in all their little time, all their different memories from when he was a kid and his mom, pa, him and together. It was really emotional. I thought that was a really wonderful story.
That's when they really create that through line where he built his whole life around this whole aspect of his real parents are saying that you're gonna help these people. And then it gets cut off at a certain point, and then his parents on Earth are the ones who built him to be the way he is, which is, I think, beautiful. I think it's absolutely beautiful.
It's a wonderful story, especially, you know, it's very much an adoptive parent story, where a lot of kids will get hung up on who their original parents were and why they aren't around and whatnot, when they've been raised by these people who took them in and chose to raise them, which I think is an even bigger endeavor. You said I will take on the responsibility of what someone else wasn't there for whatever reason.
Well, and I can pipe in here a little bit, because I thought the moment was super sweet when he was sitting down talking to Pa Kent.
Oh, it was great.
On the porch swing or whatever.
Yeah.
That conversation just like got me all choked up. Just like I want you to know how proud I am of you. Like it genuinely reminded me of my stepdad, because he used to say stuff like that to me. Later in life. It didn't happen when I was younger. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He got old and realized that some of the crazy stuff that I did that annoyed him as a kid actually had merit, and he's now proud of me. It totally reminded me of that. And I just thought that moment was super sweet.
It was. No, it is a sweet move. And I love the fact that Ma Kent kept on calling Pa Kent out for becoming a big mush when it came to anything that had to do with,
it was great.
With Clark. It was just the sweetest thing.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just love that they played them like a real Midwestern older couple. Like, that's exactly what they would be like in the Midwest. We're, Scott and I are from the Midwest. That's exactly what they would be like.
Yeah, Ma Kent, like, having her face down super close to the phone without touching it. Like, that is...
I know how to use it.
Such a Ma thing to do.
Oh, it was great. We just wanted to call and wish, keep in touch and let you know we're thinking about you.
I want you to listen, Zack Snyder, because that's so much more effective than, I don't know, maybe you should have let him die. You know what I mean? It just feels like a better plan. And his dad didn't do something stupid, like let a tornado whip him up.
That still bugs you, doesn't it?
You know, you got to think, the first few minutes of being picked up by a tornado have to be a lot of fun.
It's just the first couple of spirals.
Guess we'll never know.
Yeah.
Well, we are in the Midwest, Scott. There's a good chance we will know.
Yeah. Seriously, it's coming over my head right now.
Yeah. There's this big storm right now still. All right. So let's talk about the Justice Gang. So you got Mr. Terrific, who sounds just like Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder.
Oh, my God.
I'm like,
you're totally right.
I'm like, he's the guy playing a guy playing another dude. Yeah, and I know Eddie Gathegi was in the black. It's funny, him and Rachel Brosnahan were both in the Blacklist. But I know Eddie Gathegi, who plays Mr. Terrific, very, very well, because he was in a lot of episodes of the Blacklist. I know him as an actor. He doesn't actually normally sound like that. He's actually very loose, kind of more quicker speaker, I guess, so to speak.
And he's very stoic.
He's very stoic in here and very serious. I mean, the guy's got his name in the back of his jacket. That's pretty badass. But every time he's
tea on his face.
He does have a T in his face. But I just love it. Every time we talk, I'm like, is it offensive that I think he sounds like the white guy playing the black guy? I don't really know. I don't know if that's offensive.
What's the rules here?
Yeah. But that's what he reminded me of. Is it
the Wayne Brady of superheroes?
What did you think of him
overall? Mr. Terrific almost stole the show for me.
Would you say he was terrific?
He was terrific. Okay. You know, every time he was on screen, I was enjoying myself, and I don't know why I loved it so much. But I was actually really impressed by how much love and care they put into him as a character, and how much they gave him to do. And the fact that you like have no doubt that Mr. Terrific is one of the smartest people in the DC universe, which is what he is.
They're spheres. Circles are flat.
Yeah,
that was great. No, but the scene where he's like putting Lois in a bubble and just taking everybody down.
Yeah.
I wanted to watch that again, that's like right cool. away. Yeah, cool. I wanted that to go back so and cool. just watch it one more time. And Lois's reaction was great. I love how they like increased the music. I don't know how it was in your theater. It was almost too loud in IMAX. And then when the bubble goes away, the music comes down to a reasonable level. I thought that was a really cool effect that really made that scene stand out to me.
What I noticed during that scene is she's paying way more attention to everything he's doing and getting very excited about everything he's doing than anything she sees Superman do throughout the movie. And I'm like, he needs to look out.
Oh, come on.
Because I think old boy's coming for her.
he was awesome, though.
I mean, he's terrific. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about this is I just from the Blacklist, Eddie Gathegi was one of my favorite characters throughout the series because he's so freaking charismatic. And mm-hmm. like he really is in that show. He was very charismatic. And if you see him in other stuff, he's just a charisma bomb everywhere he walks, man. He's just a cool guy. And seeing him here, and he's playing it. I've never in a way I've never seen him play it, and he's still one of the best things in the movie. So I think that's mm-hmm. that's awesome. I'm glad he's getting.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
And on the same token, I did not realize Nathan Fillion was going to get as much screen time as he got.
Me either.
I thought it was going to be a glorified cameo. He was freaking great.
Thank you. I'm so glad because I was like so worried, know nothing about the character, and everyone's bitching about his haircut and stuff, which stupid they reference. Haircut.
Yeah.
They reference it. That was done intentionally, right?
Yeah.
He was great, man. I loved the line where the new guy comes in and says, well, what's the name of your group? Oh, that sounds awesome. he's like, you're in.
Yeah.
Like, that was so good. I love that scene. And I loved when he came in to just like wreak havoc and he's just throwing green middle fingers everywhere out of the ground.
Amazing.
That was so good. And just the way that he's doing that, like he's controlling it, but he's just so nonchalant about it. Just like, I loved that character so much in this movie. And I really did not expect to.
Absolutely. Love him. Hawk Girl, I don't think really got a lot to do.
She got one great moment though.
She did when she kills a guy. She's like, "I'm not like Superman." That was a great moment. I love Isabella Merced. She is a wonderful young actress. I just wish that she would have got a little bit more to do.
That's all. I agree.
Yeah. What else do we got? Let's see. The Daily Planet. We've got a new Perry White. I like Wendell Pierce. You know, he's in Jack Ryan and Suits. He's a really good actor. I like that they're digital and that they're still functional in that space. I like that how they handle misinformation, and I know it kind of echoes real world, how things can, especially the monkeys sending out bad data.
Dude, I watched that and I was like, oh, that's Twitter. They're just running Twitter right now.
Yeah, basically it's Twitter. Yep. Or X, sorry. Whatever.
Nope, it will forever be Twitter to me.
Loved it. He's got his bots out there. I'm sorry, monkeys doing the dirty work.
That was hilarious.
It was. A lot of good stuff there. I really did appreciate it. And I'm wondering who Cat was in this, right? That was Cat. Is that the character's name?
Cat Grant.
Boobs out the whole time.
Yeah.
Now I know she's been in several of his films. Michaela Hoover. Is this character beneficial in the future? Like, is she very important to the lexicon or anything? Or
I mean, she's got a bigger piece to do with Supergirl than anything else, but not much bigger. But we'll see. I don't know. It's she seems to have been thrown in there for the shits and giggles of it at all.
Well, she's a friend of Gunn's. I think she was Floor in Guardians of the Galaxy.
I think he meant the character was thrown in.
Oh, the character. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I did. I mean, hey, hopefully you get a little bit more. I'm sure she's got to be attracted to Jimmy Olsen. Everybody else is, so that's going to happen. You know what I mean? All right, Lois, Rachel Brosnahan. I know, you know, she doesn't get as much to do as I expected, but then she also get a lot more to do than I expected. So, I mean, it's somewhere in the middle for me. I thought she'd be doing a lot more reporting. She's kind of almost an action hero in spots, just more methodical.
You're right. However, the scene at the beginning where she's interviewing Superman.
I love that scene.
Was outstanding.
Yeah.
Just the ups and downs of that and her turning it on and turning it off when the recorder is on was fantastic. I just was so engaged, and I'm usually not into that kind of drama, like that kind of conflict, uncomfortable conflict, but it was so interesting because you kind of see both sides of the situation. And she's also playing devil's advocate a couple times to try to get under his skin, even though, you know, spoiler alert, they're dating. You know what I mean? Which, again, that was a fun reveal.
Well, it is. And it's also, I think she's trying to, in a way, kind of destroy her own relationship, right? Because it seems very obvious that she has a hard time investing in a real relationship. And I feel like she's trying to sabotage that to some degree in that interview.
And then, are we getting into spoiler? Are you staying on the character?
We're way into spoilers.
Dude, we've already spoiled the whole
movie. No, I mean, like, in terms of, like, I didn't want to stray away from the character portion of that, but the moment where he tells her that he loves her.
Oh, that's so good.
I love that for two different reasons. First, like, it's...
Well, hang on, let him finish it.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, first, the way he plays it is, like, to me, so very genuine that it felt like I was watching something very intimate between two people, and it really connected with me.
That piercing stare off away from her while he says it,
yeah,
was perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. That, and then the other reason why I love it is the Justice Gang fighting the imp in the background the whole time they're having this conversation. Oh my god.
And it went on for a while. It wasn't just like a flash.
They don't need me.
Yeah, it was almost like it was fireworks in the background for him. I mean, he's just like, they got it. And I do like that he said, like, that, by the way. I like that he said that.
Hilarious stuff going on. Like, there's like a giant hammer, a giant green hammer.
Yeah. You
know, like, just
there's a baseball bat half the time where he's hitting it with a baseball bat.
that was so great.
A lot of good stuff there, man. And I'm glad that she's in this. And I'm not kidding. You know, I know Margot Kidder is beloved by many people, and I love Margot. I think she was wonderful in the Superman movies. I think Rachel Brosnahan really brings a fresh coat of paint to the character, like she really, really did. And she really did very talented. So I'm
very believable.
Yes, very down to earth. Very.
I mean, the way genuine that they introduced you, I love that switcheroo that they did, because I had no idea that they were going to be having them dating already, because when you saw them at the Daily Planet, she was being smarmy with him, yeah. right? Like calling him out without calling him out because we don't know. And then all of a sudden, well, you know, yeah. she comes in and she's got a baseball bat and like we know yeah. who's there. Like,
well, you know, the other side of that though is that like that was another attempt of her to push him away as far as like their dating life is concerned. Yeah, that was another real attempt that she was making to push him away, just like mm-hmm. she did when she showed up. And then during the interview, those were all real attempts to sit there and like her natural, anxious avoidant way of pushing him away.
And props, and then props to the studio. I don't want to give props, but I'm thinking about it. None of the trailers really gave a ton of the plot away.
Yes.
Like, most of them was in what happens in the first 30 minutes. Like there's so much that happens that I never saw in a trailer.
Well, they showed that interview in the trailer where she's interviewing him.
Yeah. That was at the very beginning though. I mean,
but it was not in the context that you were expecting.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You thought that she was just interviewing him and actually grilling him, not knowing who he was and all this.
I thought they were dating.
No, that's not true.
No?
Yeah. Because remember, he's when they're doing it in the trailer, yeah. he's not in the suit. So
I thought they were dating. Yeah.
I had a whole other point and I completely lost it, but
I apologize.
Oh, and then in the scene where Lois is in the spaceship or whatever with Mr. Terrific, and she's like regurgitating all of these feelings and he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't do emotions. And then she just says, I know. And she keeps going. And then he just turns around and looks at her and then turns back around and like shakes his head and takes off. That interaction was so perfect to me. I loved it.
All right, so let's get into Superman. All right. And if you didn't know, Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. You know, it's been played by Henry Cavill, of course. Christopher Reeve, I think, still stands atop the mountain. Tom Welling, Tyler Hoechlin, is that his name? And George Reeves.
Hoechlin, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're forgetting one.
I wasn't trying to name them all. Brandon Routh, Dean Cain, there's a bunch Dean of them. Cain. But whoever. Yeah. But David Cornswet. So you got him now. Old Dave. Now that's the one you want to talk about, Scott. So what did you want to say? Where does he rate for you? How did he do? As Superman and Clark Kent. I think that's an important distinction.
Very high on both. And the clone, by the way, as well.
I'm not counting that. I just can't. I can't do it.
Well, he doesn't have a line of dialogue, but I loved him. The thing that I enjoyed so much about it is that, and maybe people don't like this, but to me, Superman has always been very stone-faced, stoic. You know, I'm this all-powerful being, not like bow down to me kind of situation, but just very confident. And this Superman felt vulnerable. And I think that was intentional because of the humanity theme that they were going for, especially in that final act, is making him feel more human. Even though he is from Krypton, there's like a human side to him almost. And I just love seeing that. Just the little comments he says about crypto or seeing him beat to a pulp on more than one or two occasions. Like I'm so used to Superman just being like coming in and bullets bouncing off of him and taking everybody out with no issues. And here he felt like he could be taken down because he was taken down in the opening shot, which by the way, I love that. That we're like seeing the aftermath of this massive battle, right?
Yeah, that was
good. I love that. Yeah. But I just thought he was so good. And he was a very believable Clark Kent. He wasn't too nerdy. I think he was too handsome. A little bit. Remember those girls that were like fawning over him?
What? No, they weren't fawning over him. They were fawning over Jimmy. Jimmy
Nelson. Were they? Okay.
Yeah.
Jimmy Olsen. Nelson? Who the hell is Jimmy Olsen? Yeah, and apparently he's got hypno glasses. Whatever. That's just weird.
Hypno glasses.
That's what they kept referring. That's what Guy Gardner calls. You know, they got hypno glasses, right? So, like they're hypnotizing people.
And I love the whole that whole exchange too, where she's like, "He trusts everybody."
So, John, how did he rate for you?
Middle of the road for me at the moment. I'm not too convinced about it. He's a great Clark Kent. I think he's a great Clark Kent. When he's walking around wearing the suit and the glasses and he's got his hair's all a mess, I think he's great as a Clark Kent. I'm not necessarily sold on the Superman aspect of him yet, really? But I will say that his ability to convey the compassion and the caring and the being a nice person and all of that actually transferred through very well, and he did a fantastic job. So, like, I don't know. I might still have my Cavill glasses on, but you know, he's kind of in the middle of the road at the moment.
I don't think he beats Henry Cavill, because I still say Henry Cavill did not get the best script.
No, he didn't.
To leap off of, because whenever he had a chance to shine, I thought he was great. And if you saw like Zack Snyder's Justice League, when he gets a couple moments to really shine with humor, and I think he knocked those out too. So I still prefer him as Superman, but he's done in the role. Now, in terms of the rest of the Superman, I'm not going through that whole list, but Christopher Reeve is the guy. Like, he's still the guy. He's not coming off that mountaintop for me, but I like Cornsweet. Now, he gives a monologue at the end, and I appreciate that Gunn's monologuing doesn't go too crazy. Like, they're mini logs, if you will. where his characters kind of explain their motives, and he has a very good one at the end about, you know, being good and what being human means and what he's learned without being too overly emotional, and it just really, I think, stuck the landing. I do think there's a couple moments where I think he does come across just as petulant as Lex, when he's kind of being snippy with Lois because she's questioning his motives. I think Superman would have held his ground a little more sound than that. You know, when he's going after Lex for the dog, he immediately goes to kind of threatening him, which is not what I would see Superman doing, but also it's personal. I get it. So, you know, I don't think he's knocking the doors down just yet, but I think he has the potential to. I really like whenever he dropped a darn or anything that should
have golly.
Yeah, should have been a swear word. I think he really handled that to where it sounded like his real vernacular as opposed to sounding like he's forced to say it. And I think his chemistry with Rachel Brosnahan is fantastic. Like, they have very, very strong chemistry. I believe that they want a hump.
They kind of did a little bit.
Well, I don't think they really did, but I think I believe that they might like want to. They're probably married or something, but I'm just saying, like, they got good chemistry. It's there.
We've got one other character to talk about.
Who's that? The dog?
The dog,
the CGI
man.
Dog? The crypto dog?
Listen, you guys both know I'm a cat guy.
Yeah, we apologize.
I like dogs.
You.
Don't love dogs. Crypto was probably my favorite thing about this dang movie.
I think it's going to be most people's favorite thing, if I'm being honest.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun.
Yeah, if you don't own him, because he would suck to actually have as a dog.
Dude, the fact that he was just like...
You brought the dog with you? Yeah, I couldn't leave him at my parents' farm. He's going to eat all the cows.
I love the line where Superman is like, I got to go save the... He's like, you're going to go save the dog? He's like, yeah, he's not even a good dog. Leave the hell alone. I loved that line.
The
so
alone
much.
Part is what got me. I'm like, oh, but he's all alone. And it really felt like that's there you go. There's a connection that we haven't talked about. I think that was done so well in this one where, you know, in previous movies, I felt like, you know, Superman was just on the cusp of killing multiple people throughout multiple movies, including the original ones with Christopher Reeve. Mm-hmm. But here you see him save a squirrel. You see him go risk his own life for the dog. Like, there's multiple moments where you see, like, he really truly believes nobody deserves to die. And if he has the ability to stop it, he will, no matter what. Mm-hmm. And I love that aspect. And I think it's probably the best aspect of the writing for the movie to me. Like, they really brought that to life, which hasn't been done very well in the past.
Also, I feel like it's the best use of seeing Superman save somebody by holding up a massive object. Where you feel like...
Where he blows the dog away?
Well, that one too. That was really funny. But no, like when he's holding up the building with the woman that's in the car trapped under it. In other Superman movies, it just seems like, oh yeah, this little guy holding it up and it's fine. You really bought into the idea of how powerful he is that he's able to do that in this. Better than any other one I've seen. That and the...
I've got to go to the bathroom face really well.
Yeah, he's really fighting against it, which is cool.
And that's giant monster cool. That started out as a little creature, like he caught that one before it. That the same thing. Every time he caught something, it was.
Yeah. Like, and he was trying not to kill the thing too. He's like, "Well, we can take it and study it. We can do something. Take it to an intergalactic place." And and they're like, "No, just kill it."
An intergalactic zoo. Like, that's the thing that just happens.
Oh, speaking of crypto, I love that the fact that the way that they kept him occupied was putting him in a pod where he was chasing flying squirrels and just like running for them.
That's pretty good. And,
God, that was brilliant. That was so funny. And just a look on that dog's face when he's just like, he's just flying, chasing these squirrels was so good. Oh,
He's the bestest boy.
It was awesome.
Oh man. I do think there's a lot going on, but I will say, like, in terms of creating and launching a new universe, I think James Gunn did a much better job than Zack Snyder did, in terms of, you know, Justice League and, or at least, I'm sorry, Justice League. That one is really, he did a much better job than that. He didn't do a much better job. I think Zack Snyder's Justice League is actually phenomenal, and I'm not going to retract that. So this had, I didn't like the whole paradigm. What was the split that's rupturing throughout the world? I thought that was kind of, can we do something better than this? I thought that was pretty lame. You know, that's something that, but I enjoyed the characters. I enjoyed the fight. I really enjoyed Lex versus Superman. And one thing that really impressed me is just they hit the ground running, never stopped and looked back. He didn't apologize for it. He didn't sit there and explain it all away. He gave you a little exposition without a long exposition scene, which was great. We're just gone. We're going. And I feel like we start the movie halfway through it. Like, we're in part two already, which was nice.
I did appreciate that a lot. Like, just that little bit of text and the clever way they did the text. You mentioned it in the spoiler-free section, but, you know, 3 centuries ago, 30 years ago, 3 weeks ago, 3 hours ago. You know, I loved that. 3 minutes ago.
So good.
Yeah. That movie starts with him getting his ass kicked. We didn't even see him get his ass kicked. We just find him with his ass kicked.
He's really not that super, if you think about it, because he needs help all the time. He's getting his ass kicked all the time. Maybe he shouldn't be the leader.
What's next? Like, he's met his literal match, equal match. Like, what's the next big bad?
I don't know. Well, I like that the Hall of Justice is there, so it's probably going to be some cumulative foe where they all got to come together to beat him, I would guess, or something like that. I mean, Gunn's strength are team-ups, right? He just really has a good knack for that balance. So I don't know if it's going to be that or if he's going to go back to a full solo Superman. But I look forward to whatever they do next.
Agreed. I feel excited for the DC universe for the first time in a long time. I mean, I like the Batman trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like the first two anyway. I didn't love the last one. I need to go watch that one again. But
that's not part of the DC EU. That was more like a offshoot.
Sure.
That was before that.
Okay, well, just DC in general.
Well, I'm mad that I still don't have Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, but I'll get over it. They're going to recast her, and if they can make something strong like this, then I'll be happy to see what they do next. But yeah, I'm reinvigorated for the DCU, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Same here. Yeah.
Any final words, guys?
Go see Superman.
Seriously. I mean, if you've made it this far in the episode.
You've already seen it, but go see it
You've again. Already seen it. At least I hope so. But tell someone to go see it. Go see it again and bring someone with you, because this movie is a ton of fun. And listen to Brian Williams and myself. IMAX 3D is worth the extra few bucks.
All right, guys. There you go. You heard it from Scott Clark himself. IMAX 3D. Way to go. And thanks for listening, everybody. Remember, the next time you head to a theater to see Superman in an IMAX 3D or whatever you can reasonably afford, buy popcorn. Just don't watch it on Plex, you cheap sons of bitches. Actually, go out and see it in a theater.